Prayer.
Clarity. Can you see a sound? Can you hear a light? Can you unite your senses? Can you turn inward? What we are all seeking is clarity. Forget about religious rationalizations. Forget about elaborate explanations. What we all want is clarity. What we abhor is ignorance. Ignorance confuses us, brings us misfortune and sorrow, and makes us miserable. If we have clarity, then we can live with equanimity. It is a misconception that spirituality brings everlasting happiness. There is no such thing. Sadness still comes to those to the wise, but unlike most people, their clarity of mind allows them to see beyond the temporal emotionalism of the moment. They are far-seeing, and so happiness and sorrow become the same to them. True clarity is more than just being smart, more than just being wise. Clarity manifests from meditation. It comes when you can unite all the faculties of the mind and unify them into a magnificent light of perception. It is hard to talk of this in anything but mystical terms. Our language is unfamiliar with the frontiers of the spirit because few have ever seen those limits, let alone describe them. But let's try. If you unite sound with vision, then you will create light. That light is the concentrated force of the mind. It is by that brightness that truth is revealed.
I like that. So the first nine steps we've covered, and those first nine steps are the launching pad into the world of the spirit. Now that it's almost like we've opened a doorway and we're entering this new world of the spirit, but the world of the spirit has a different type of language. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we call that the language of the heart. And I believe in order to access the intuition that's available to us through the language of the heart, that we have to implement a consistent and disciplined prayer and meditation life. Now, when I start my day, it starts with step 11. Step 10 is the step that walks with me throughout the course of the day. And part of step 10 is prayer. And I'll show you. It says we continue to take personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. I can't tell you the number of times I've sat in a meeting where the topic is the 10th step and it's looked at as a form of inventory at the end of the day, no downside to that, and it's looked at admitting when I was wrong and doing it quickly. And this step is like an abyss. It has no limit. There's no bottom to this page specifically, maybe every page in the book, but specifically this page. This thought of making amends, I'm on page 84. This thought of making amends brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory. So this is a walking around inventory that we're taking. We're observing our internal space. We're observing our environment. And continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So it implies that we're doing this as we move. We're not waiting until the end of the day. We vigorously, with energy, commence this way of living as we clean up our past. We've entered into the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding, I believe, the spiritual realm and effectiveness in the human realm. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So what are we going to do in the 10th step as we're walking around? We're going to watch. We're going to become a witness and an observer to what? we're paying attention to see if we can notice ourselves becoming selfish, becoming dishonest, becoming angry and resentful, or being consumed by fear. We're on the lookout. These are the watchwords. When, it doesn't say if, when these crop up, we ask, circle, that says prayer. Ask God at once to remove them. It doesn't say God will remove them at once. It says we're just, our job, our responsibility is to ask. We discuss them with someone immediately. This is the last thing I'll do after I go through this process. And I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. Then, quickly, resolutely, at once, I turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And I try to practice a code of love and tolerance. And I've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol and drugs. So that is the mechanics of a 10th step. So what does that look like in the course of a day? And so I started a new job 2 weeks ago, and I'm in training, and I have a great deal of information that I'm learning, and I have had to notice that I am afraid that there's so much that I might not be able to grasp a hold of it. It's going to take me a while to perform, so there's fear about not performing. I work at a company that has 50 employees, and I think close to 40 of them are in the program or in the fellowship. And so they all, I have a reputation, so they all know a certain aspect of my life, and they've listened to me talk at meetings, and some of them have heard me, you know, go through the big book and speak at meetings. And so they have this idea, you know, I perform very well here. I should automatically perform well over here. So that creates an existential crisis for me, because for the first time in my life, my professional life and my recovery life are completely intersected. And so this is transforming me in a way, but it's also creating a tremendous amount of fear, uncertainty, discomfort. So I notice these things throughout the course of the day. So my 10-step practice for me, because I've been doing this for so long, is to pause, take a deep breath, and acknowledge the presence of God in my breath. That practice encompasses all of these practices, because I've been practicing the 10th step in the way I'm describing it for almost 12 years. So I have a lot of experience. But when I first started, it wasn't just take a deep conscious breathing and, you know, experiencing or cultivating the expectancy of God's presence. It was watch. When selfishness and this fear crop up, I stop and I say, God, please remove this fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. And then I turn my thoughts back to what I'm being. Like, I'm being present to my work. I used to turn my thoughts to someone I could help. There was years when I would automatically start, like the first person that popped in my head, I'd call them and ask them how they were doing. That was the early years practice. Now it's more about a state of being for me, so I need to be present. I turn back and be present for what is showing up, the moment. Be present for the moment. I can't just disengage with the workday and pick up the phone and call somebody. I've got to turn my thoughts back to my state of being, which is present to my work. And then I practice a code of love and tolerance, because, you know, there's always going to be people that test our patience. That's just part of life. And we try to observe this code of love and tolerance. Sometimes we can keep it intact, and other times we get exposed. And we say or do something that requires us to go back and make an apology. That's part of the 10th step. But it's the watch, ask, turn, right? And then there are some times when I'm experiencing something in life that, you know, I was on the computer learning how to use the software and create these rate confirmations. And the software, in my opinion, is archaic, and some of the steps don't make any sense. And everybody in the office has their own way of using it, so nothing's streamlined. I sit with three people and I get three different ways of using the same system. So I'm left a little confused and afraid and just overwhelmed. And in the breathing process, in the 10th step practice, I have to just stop fighting and surrender to the experience. Cease fighting anything or anyone. That's how you participate in an active 10th step. And the 10th step is by far, without a shadow of a doubt, the hardest step to practice, because we are up against the egoic mind, and the ego, one of the ego's primary purposes is to separate us. And the way it does that is it disengages us from the present moment and identifies us with our what's going on in the mind. I'm going to fail. This job is not the right fit. I shouldn't be here. Now, some of those have drifted through. But there's a large part of me that's enjoying what I'm doing, learning something new. I don't hate it like I hated my last job. And I'm showing up and I'm performing well. And I'm just going to see what happens. And all of that is embodied in the cease fighting anything or anyone. So that is an active 10th step. That's what that 10th step looks like. Now, this right after cease fighting anything or anyone is the most powerful promise in our big book, based on people who are of the hopeless variety. That means you've wanted to stop doing the drugs and the alcohol for so long, but you've been unable to do so on your own power. And then at some point in this process, I think it happens at a different point in the process for everyone. But once they get to the 10th step and they've had this experience, they now have a description of it. And I was talking to somebody. I'm going to tell you guys when I realized that this stuff was real. It says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. All right. Remember, back in step two, we're talking about being restored to sanity. So we were insane. And now this part of the book is referencing the desperate experiment of the first one. We're being restored to sanity around that. We will seldom be interested in drugs and alcohol. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. So what does that look like? It looks like me driving through that part of town where I always used to cop. And I'm pulled up into that red light. And I see the guys going to work. I see the girls out on the street. And I take a deep breath. And I exhale. And the light turns green. And I drive through the intersection. And I don't even think about what I just saw anymore. But when I was sitting at that light, it was triggering all kinds of memories. And then in the way I look at it, in the acknowledgement of my breath and doing a 10th step the way I'm describing it, but in the early years, I've been through that intersection many times since I got clean and sober. So years ago, I'd be sitting at that light going, God, please keep me present. Please keep me safe and protected. And then I'd look up, light turn green, and then I go. It's just there's been an evolution to my 10th step. But regardless, what has happened is I recoil as if from a hot flame. So I've had 5 surgeries since I got clean and sober. I've been put on opiates every single time. And every single time I've sat there, and in the more about alcoholism, it says that although Tarek may stay away from drugs and alcohol for a month or a year, he reacts like most people. But as soon as Tarek introduces alcohol and drugs into the system, something happens both bodily and mentally. I remember sitting, and I'd be on like day 2 or 3, and I would start to see myself have the abnormal physical reaction. I would notice it, and I'd start to see these thoughts about telling my ex-wife that, hey, I'm ready for my next dose. It was 1 to 2 every 4 to 6 hours of Percocets, and I would see the lies start, and I would wonder if I could get into the kitchen and get the pills out of the drawer, and she wouldn't hear me upstairs. And every single time in 5 surgeries, as soon as I observed that, I yelled to her and said, I'm done with the pills, take them. That's recoil as if from a hot flame. Why did I have the ability to recoil like that? Because those drugs and alcohol, for lack of better words, the medication was not filling a God-shaped hole in me. I had no internal condition that needed to be treated by an anesthetic. And so when I started to notice these things, because with opiates, you start to experience the physicality of it, the physical effect of it. And I was able to recoil as if from a hot flame. So those were 5 different instances where I had a real, live, palpable experience with being safe and protected. We react sanely and normally, and we'll find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward drugs and alcohol has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. Without any effort on our part, where has all the thought and effort gone? About removing self-centeredness, selfishness. We haven't been focused on drugs and alcohol in a long time as far as this book is concerned. It's about something else. That's where the thought and the effort has been directed. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. The illusion that I ever had a choice is the problem that has been removed. It doesn't exist for me today. I'm not cocky. I'm not afraid. This is my experience. And this is how long I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. That is a conditional statement. You will have access to this experience if you're in fit spiritual condition. Those five times, I was in fit spiritual condition. By the grace of God, I took the actions for an extended period of time, and I had disciplined myself to where this had become like brushing my teeth, prayer, meditation, practicing step 10 throughout the course of the day. The first time this promise hit me was when I was about 2 years clean and sober, and there was a guy I needed a 12-step call in a hotel room, so I called up my buddy Danny, and we went down to the hotel room, and we walked, and this guy was a crackhead, and there was crack, there was stems, there was, there was all kinds of stuff, right? And I remember gathering stuff up and going into the bathroom to start flushing down the toilet, and I'm sitting there going, holy shit, the 10-step promises are true. This is real. I have no relationship with any of this stuff. It's completely gone. That's just a wild experience to be a part of. And understanding, not from reading it in a book, but actually having the experience to back it up. So this is part of the reason I haven't let up on the spiritual program of action and rested on my past accomplishments. I know I'm headed for trouble. I'm headed for trouble if I do that, because crack cocaine is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of my alcoholism and my addiction. What I have is a daily stay of execution. That's what a reprieve is, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. A vision, my idea of what that may or may not look like. How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done. So on page 63, you gave it up. And on page 85, they're saying, hey, you're still under the direction. Not much choice, but try to live and create a vision of God's will and carry it into all your activities. This happened in 22 pages. 22 pages, a lot of action. This 10th step... If practiced, you'll start to notice that spirituality is not something outside of your life. It shouldn't be approached that way, and you will find it embedded in your life if you participate in an active 10th step. This step is about staying awake, in my opinion. We call it inventory. But it combines prayer, meditation, and self-examination. And when you use those three things in conjunction, you've got something pretty powerful working for you. This is the new language. This is the spiritual realm. And this is where all the juice in the program resides, is in this step and the 11th step. The 11th step has evolved for me. For years, I read my page 86 to 88. And then about 2 years in, I started reading 84 to 88, and I started adding other books. And then I turned it into a conversation from God. Upon awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. God, please direct my thinking. Divorce it from self-pity, self-seeking motives. And I would start asking God, instead of just reading the pages, God, please divorce my thinking. God, please give me the capacity and the strength and the awareness to pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. So I began having the pages turn into a conversation with God. And I began reading these other pages, these other books, and my practice evolved from there. And about 3 years ago, I incorporated something new. I was introduced to this idea that prayer without presence of the heart is invalid. Prayer without knowledge is invalid. I began to wonder, why am I praying? Am I willing to investigate why I am praying? What am I doing this for? How is it relevant? Am I present to what I'm doing? Am I making myself available to the presence of God? Am I cultivating the expectancy of God's presence? And so now when I wake up in the morning, I did it this morning, the first thing I do when I sit to pray and meditate, and what my practice looks like is I ask myself these two questions. Why am I about to engage this practice? I'm not looking for a specific answer, nor am I concerned with what shows up in my consciousness. I'm just asking the question because I promise you, if you do this exercise, it will ground you into the practice. It will change the experience of the practice. Because what happens to a lot of us is this becomes a habit, and it becomes a ritual, and we forget why we're doing it. It's just like a box we check every day. We're no longer investigating anything. And sometimes it's a fear that I'm going to relapse, and that's why I'm doing it. It has nothing to do with deepening my experience with God. We got to check for these things. And so the way I check is I ask myself the first question, why am I about to engage this practice? And I do that for like a minute to a minute and a half. And then the second question, is my heart present to what I'm about to do? Am I sincere in why I'm doing this? That's investigating. That is wondering, why is this relevant to me today? Why is this practice relevant? And as I do that, that takes up about 3 or 4 minutes. And then I work with 4 or 5 books. I read 2 pages out of each book. And the reason I do this is not for knowledge. I'm reading just to notice the impact of how it lands inside of me as I'm reading these pages. And I read a lot. They're all spiritual books that I read. And then once I'm done with that, I meditate from anywhere. It could be it is rare that it's less than 15 minutes, and typically it's 20 or 25 minutes. And that typically takes me about an hour to do. I was talking to one of the sponsees this week about them. They weren't praying and meditating, and they were tired, and they were And man, I just got a new job, and like, I mean, for a while now, I've been waking up at 6:45, 7:15. Well, now I got to get up at 4:45. That's what time my alarm goes off. I got to be out the door at 6:30. So if I want to do the practices, take a shower, get a quick bite, I need as much time as possible. And that's how important it is that I devote time to this power called God. My sponsor says something that the first time I heard him say it, it made a lot of sense. 2 things. Don't let the life AA gives you get in the way of your AA life. I've seen that take out so many people. And then this is my favorite. My recovery is God's gift to me. What I do with my recovery is my gift to God. That is embodied in how I carry these 2 practices into my life. This is how we cultivate the expectancy of God's presence in our life. Brandon said it at one point this weekend, this is about God. And if talk of God takes you out, meth, crack, heroin, alcohol will bring you right back, hopefully. That's all we have to offer here is a spiritual experience. And for some people that's hard to digest, that's all we have to offer here. Some people are under an illusion or a delusion that they're here for a spiritual experience. I don't know what it's going to be for you, but the reason I know this is what I've been watching over years is I've watched a lot of people. They get here, they do some work, they start to get some money, they start to get a job, they start to get a relationship. And if they fit the description of the addict and the alcoholic in this big book, what ends up happening is it's not really about God. And once they've attained the things they wanted to attain, it's about addition, not subtraction, spiritual life is about subtraction. I mean, Brandon's been one of the greatest examples of subtraction that I've seen. Because when I first met him, he drove a really nice car. He had no beard. He was just clean cut, business world, that type of thing. And then he discovered things he loved, and like these things started to fall away from him. And I witnessed this transformation. It's almost like the real Brandon came to the surface. It's been quite phenomenal to watch. And I think that was only he was able to notice that and honor it because of a disciplined prayer and meditation life. He may disagree with me, but I really think that you only see that. These revelations that come to us and these enlightenments, they only happen if we have a maturing intuition. And our intuition only matures if we have a consistent prayer and meditation life. That's how we cultivate the sixth sense. In order to remember God. So one of the things I work with sponsees is in the back of the book, and it's in the spiritual experience appendix. And it says most of our members believe that the awareness, which I translate into attention, awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence. Essence is an important word. The central point, the actual being of something, the essence of the spiritual experience is the awareness of a power greater than yourself. I wasn't great at reading comprehension on those standardized tests, but based on reading that paragraph, what it implies to me is that I need to think about God as often as possible. And the only tools that we have available to us, I won't say only, but the two best tools we have available to us for remembering God as often as possible are the 10th and the 11th step. Consistent practice. Practice, practice, practice. That's it. That's all we have to do.
Talking about practice?
And practice is important. And like my, I've had a few sponsors. One of my sponsors was sponsored by this man who's helped thousands of people. His name's Mark Houston, and he told me a story about calling Mark up one day, and he's like learning how to meditate, and he's like, man, I can't shut off the reptile brain or the lizard brain, and I'm having all these sexual thoughts, and it's just crazy in there. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? And then Mark sort of gives him that little giggle over the phone. He's like, ha, ha, ha. Practice, practice, practice. And just hung up the phone. That's it. All right. But we want to create, and see, our manipulation and our control even can come into our spiritual practices because we set out with a vision of what we're going to have when we meditate, of what prayer is supposed to look like. And this is all about investigation and curiosity. Curiosity is one of the most important, if not the most important, attributes when it comes to the spiritual realm. Or what's going to happen if you're not curious and you get the girlfriend and you get the money and you get the job, you're going to be satisfied. And you're going to think that's all there is of God. And there's so much more. I mean, this program, what's available to us here truly cannot be fathomed. And it's all like 12 simple principles that we happen to call steps. But you got to have the proper attitude. And the proper attitude here for when I was new, was to lay aside my prejudice, was to think honestly, and was to search diligently within myself. And what was promised to me is if I did those things, I would join the members of Alcoholics Anonymous on the broad highway, the ones that are actually doing this work. And so my sponsor and we have a weekly sponsorship family meeting. About 2 months ago, he was asking us a question. He's like, everybody hangs their hat on a different step. And some people hang their hat on the 12th step. You know, some people hang their hat on the first step. Some people hang their hat on the amends steps. Some people hang their hat on 6 and 7. And everyone had – I was amazed by how many different answers. But all the answers, I think, were influenced by where you, what you were experiencing in your life at that moment. And when he came to me, and because of all the conversations, he started off – he's like, oh, Tarek, I know where this hat's going. And because of the conversations we have on the phone, and – I said, you know what? There's a part of me that wants to hang my hat on the 12th step, but I'll have to be honest. If I am being honest, I hang my hat on the 10th and the 11th step, both of them. Because those steps were game changers for me. Step 12 was a game changer. You're going to hear me talk about it. But this step and like the curiosity that I was blessed with, this was a complete gift and that I like to research. That's all I do is I like to, both of us, we like to research the spiritual realm. You see all the books we have up here besides the big book. We've read out of them this weekend because we see the overlap as we're reading our big book, which we both thoroughly love and we are considered big book enthusiasts. But we see like this is, we're talking about ancient. The spiritual path is ancient. This book's only 86 years old. It pulled from a lot of other sources. And so in the 11th step, I think the most important rule to follow is be quick to see where religious people are right. It doesn't say they're always right, and make use of what they offer. And that's what we've done. So ask yourself, why am I doing these practices? Is my effort sincere? Or am I just checking the box so I can get back to my life?
Talking about practice, not a game, but practice. Oh, practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you were lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say that to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back at years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? Steps 10 and 11, I mean, without steps 10 and 11 and a speaker disc that was given to me 2 weeks dry, I'm not sure I'd be here. Because in that talk, this guy talks about steps 10 and 11. And he starts out the talk by going, I love meetings that start out with meditation because it gets me here. Mind, body, spirit. Because I've never been here before. Okay? And then he goes on for an hour and a half to talk about steps 10 and 11. And the stuff that he's talking about, like if you could wake up every day and realize you've never been here before. And you can look at your wife and your child and those people in your life and realize that you've never been with them before. How can you not enjoy life? That's about the... There's some more in there, but that's about the first 3 minutes and 27 seconds of that talk that I listened to probably 150 times. Because it's that powerful. Because what happened in this talk is he talks about these steps 10 and 11. And he says steps 10 and 11 are new language. These are things that we've never experienced or understood or comprehended before. There's a practice where I get to interact with whatever this power is that's keeping me sober and made the entire universe. I'll try that for a little bit. See what happens, right? So in the 10th step, it talks about this vision, right? It talks about vision. And it says we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Like Tarek said, we give our will and our life over to the care of whatever this power is. In the third step, and get this, as we go through the steps, get the fourth step, and I see all the flawed thinking and the way that I interact. I share it with somebody else. They point out some new stuff. I take it to God in six. I beg God to remove it in seven. I go clean it up in steps eight and nine. By the time I get to step 10, the person I am and the awareness I have of the way that I walk through life has changed. So the will and life I gave to God over there in the third step, I get to align with here in the 10th step. In the doctor's opinion, it says that we get to recreate our life. That implies that we have a participation in the recreation, right? Well, we do, because by the time we get to step 10, we're in alignment with, right? I believe that we are born with this power to do anything we want. If you study the Bible and things like that, there's a passage by Jesus that says, you will do these things, everything he's done, and more. It's pretty powerful, right? Because I think this guy that's in the Bible, Jesus, he was a pretty powerful dude, right? But he says that we're going to do more. See, the problem is for most of us, we get out of alignment with whatever this thing is, spirit. And if we're actually given the power to have our thoughts do what we want, we might create some harm with it. But after I go through this process and I clean up my past and all the things that I do and the way that I think, then I gain access to a different way of thinking. This is from another book. It's called As a Man Thinketh. This little volume, the result of meditation and experience, is not intended as an exhaustive treaty on the much written upon subject of the power of thought. It is suggestive rather than explanatory. Its object being to stimulate men and women to discover and perception of the truth. They themselves are makers of themselves. By virtue of the thoughts which they choose and encourage, that mind is the master weaver both of the inner garment of character and the outer garment of circumstance, and that as they may have hitherto woven in ignorance and pain, they may now weave enlightenment and happiness. And so I get to create a vision. Like if I want to end up in California, I'm not there yet. The first thing I have to do is I have to decide I want to go to California. And then there's all sorts of steps that I have to take to actually get to California. But all those steps to get to California, I can't take if I don't even know that I want to get to California. So I have to create a vision of my life, okay? In the fourth step, in the sex inventory, it tells us to create an ideal for our future sex life. When I go through inventory with another guy, at the end of it, I have him write an ideal for his relationship, sex life. I have him generally write an ideal for work, how to be a good sponsor, a good brother, whatever it is that they're struggling with. I have them write an ideal of what that looks like just show up that way. Because if we want these things out of our life, shouldn't we know what we're wanting? And that's where the 10th step talks about vision. Okay? In the 11th step, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. All these books up here, all this stuff that we do. I've gone through multiple trainings of other modalities with the purpose of one thing, is for self-cultivation, to find a deeper understanding of how to walk the spiritual path. I got all sorts of fancy certificates and letters I could put behind stuff that has nothing to do with what I do for a living. Nothing. But it is all in this idea of seeking a deeper understanding of how reality is. Okay? Now my favorite question. This really is the favorite question I can ask ever. And I love to watch the response. What if all of our thoughts are actually prayers? Said that years ago in this room, and somebody obliged from the back and said, well, then those would be some pretty fucked up prayers. And I love that guy, and I have no idea who he was, because he made the point. What if they are? Would you endeavor to clean up your thoughts? Would you endeavor to be more impeccable with your word? Would you endeavor to think in positive ways so that you attract positive things to you? Because words are pretty powerful. Spoken words are more powerful than thought words. And words that you put into action are even more powerful. But the spoken words reveal to the outside world the way that you think. So watch your words. When I ask somebody how they are and they say not bad, what's the major word that you're hearing in that sentence? No. Bad is, either way, not is not good, and bad is bad. Why not just change that to good? Why not, when somebody asks you how you are, why not say excellent? Perfect. Magnificent. Start combining words. Super magical. Because I don't know, because I don't call myself, but I suspect if you survey the people that are in my life, when they call me and they ask me how I'm doing, I suspect that 99.9999% of the time, they will tell you that they get a response that is something like excellent or wonderful. Because I am. And the difference between me and most people is I noticed. If you think that you are a bad person, you're right. If you think you're a good person, you're right. My stepson, he was struggling with a project one day. And he was talking about how He couldn't. And he was talking about his mom kept suggesting things to him. And he kept saying, that won't work, that won't work, that won't work. And I was passing through the room and I said, Phoenix, you're right. like looked at me like, what? I was like, you're right. What do you mean? Like, you're right, that won't work. Because you believe it won't work. I don't have the exact quote, but Henry Ford said something like, if you believe something to be true or not, you're right. So I told Phoenix, I said, Phoenix, you believe that it won't work and it's not going to work. So I'm going to prove it to you. Touch the ceiling. He's a shorter kind of kid. For months he's been trying to jump up and touch the ceiling, and he's like that short. I said, Phoenix, touch the ceiling. And he went, like acting like he was jumping, but he wasn't. I said, Phoenix, touch the ceiling. He's like, I can't. I was like, you're right. Tell me to touch the ceiling. Oh, you can touch the ceiling. Tell me to touch the ceiling. Touch the ceiling. I walked over, climbed up on a bar stool, put my hands and my face on the ceiling. Said, see, look. And he said, you didn't say I could get up on the stool. And I said, I didn't say you couldn't. He believed it was impossible to touch the ceiling, and he was right. Okay? When we gain access to this power of meditation and thought and vision, and we get to experience a different reality in this world. We get to go explore things. So, in the family afterwards, it says, those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness. Say that word.
Childishness.
Of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of a power of God in our lives. We have come to believe he would like us to keep our head in the clouds with him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. So, through prayer and meditation, you gain access to this power, this ability to separate the thinking mind from the spirit in your own body, right? I have this ability to separate thoughts while I'm talking about other thoughts. Only comes from meditation. It comes from slowing the mind down and being able to observe myself observing myself in the experience while observing you. Okay? This sounds like it's far out there stuff, but meditation gets you in touch with whatever's going on internally to where you can access this stuff. Okay? It is easy, once you've been here for a little while, and I've done this, Tarek's watched it, and I appreciate him letting me kind of go off in it, but when you get to doing this for a little while, you get this spiritual intoxication where you want to just go so deep and so out there that you just... your head gets out there in the clouds, okay? And you sit across from me and we start having spiritual conversations. There's very few people that I don't lose at some point in the conversation because the concept of what I'm talking about, I've thought about, and I've folded into itself, and I've experienced in a way that comes through meditation and thought and deep understanding of how the universe works. But you can get lost out there. The real essence of the spiritual path is when you can go out there and come back and keep your feet on the ground and have a conversation with somebody. And you can access where they are on the spiritual path as a result of them cultivating this way of life and exploring these methods and these things. Because here's what I know is every single one of us, was put on this earth for a purpose that nobody else can do. If you ever read, I don't know if you guys ever had to, but But back in high school, I had to read Ralph Waldo Emerson all the time, right? Like that, my teacher loved Emerson, and she loved Walden, and she was a hippie chick that I'm pretty certain went out to the car and got stoned in between each class, because I mean she was out there, right? And she loved all this stuff, and we had to read this stuff and study this stuff, and it didn't make any fucking sense to me. And then I get sober and I start doing the 11th step and I start exploring these 11th step readings. Dude, Emerson, like, he had the keys to the kingdom. This dude knew some shit. And now that I'm actually spiritually awake, I can read it and go, no way. That dude knew that like 100 years ago? And then you explore and you find somebody that knew it 200 years ago and somebody that knew it 2,000 years ago and 3,000 years ago. But Emerson said, every man has his own vocation. The talent is the call. He has abilities which are only he can access. He has a purpose in his life that only he can access. And if he doesn't access it, nobody else ever will. But here's the crazy thing. You don't access it, we're all okay. You don't find your purpose, we'll survive just fine. But when you start to find your purpose in communicating your way of life or whatever it is that you want to be the best at, whatever you were made to be the best at, then you get full access of the universe's power to support you in that endeavor. The universe has given Tarek some talents, and he's given me some talents, and some of them are mixed up and don't match one bit. I know a shit ton about construction and how things go together and how it operates and how the schedules work and all this stuff. But my spiritual explorations have very little to do with that. But what I've learned is that God's given me that ability to go explore so that God has a mechanism to deliver money to me so that I can do right now what it seems like my purpose is, which is to take guys that have been around for a little while back through the steps to have a deeper understanding and experience with these steps and God. Because that's who keeps showing up for me right now. And that's going to change. And because of the 10th and the 11th step, I get to be aware of that, and I get to see it, and I get to interact with it, and I get to move, go here, do this. But all of this started, all of it started back when I got to this place where I was completely defeated. From my experience with making amends as a result of my first step experience and the hope I experience in the following steps, I am much more motivated to do a daily 10th step. My spirit knows how essential it is to maintain contact with the power that enables me to stay sober. Without a visceral experience in step 1, I will see step 10 as something I can take relief. At this point, I am eager to establish and maintain a relationship with God, with a God of my understanding. I look forward to my meditation practices. I am energized and enthusiastic about this relationship. I want to learn more about this God and I really don't understand. Without that first step experience, I will view meditation and prayer as a chore. And I will not see how essential it is for me to have access to this power that I hear others talk about. It is abundantly clear I must pass this on to others or I will die. I think we'll talk about that when we come back after the break.
It's 8:19. Come back at 8:35 and we'll knock it out.